Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leadering Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. It's a special live show here. It's, Sunday. You know, normally we never do a show on Sunday, but we're not going to be able to do it this Thursday, so we decided to get on today, especially because we have a special guest that's going to be coming through to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring, which is the R.A. Rugged Man. R.A. Rugged Man, a rap artist, a legendary rap artist, also a very well-known a boxing head, guy that loves to talk about the sport, has rapped about the sport. So he's going to be joining us shortly. Let me bring in my partner in crime, Mr. Montoya. What's up, brother? You out there?
I am indeed. How are you, Dave? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you good, man. I'm doing good.
Oh, excellent.
I'm doing good, man.
Yeah. I've got a little bit of a cold myself, but I think I went out at it a little bit hard last night. I had two drinks, Dave. I was feeling a little crazy.
Living crazy there.
Yeah, I know.
Living the crazy life, you know?
I know, but, it's trying to get through this. We had some fights this week, you know. I look crazy, right. You know. I think the Red Koch fight was cool. I think that's a nice prospect. It was a good win for him against a durable guy. Nothing totally to get crazy about. But I'm really excited about Wilder Stavern this week. I think that has a potential to be a significant fight. But also just a very entertaining fight. I don't know what your take is on it. We'll break it down as we go. Let me see if I can track down Mr. R.A., the Rugged Man, and or make sure I'll get you his number, and we'll be calling him in just a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, starting off the new year with ESPN, Showtime, and then Fox Sports, Jay-Z having his debut in the throne boxing, it was pretty good. I have to say, you know, I mean, look, none of them were really big fights, but they were at least fights that filled up our Friday and it gave us some value entertainment. But the big talk will be about Burmese Stavern and Dante Wilder, a real heavyweight fight. I'm actually really honestly interested. I'm excited. I think there's a lot to talk about between the both of them. I think that they both bring certain flaws to their arsenal, but I also think that there's got to be a certain strategy that one guy has got to lead himself into in order to secure a victory. And I tell you what, Gabriel, just to start it off really quick, fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. You can chime in this conversation about Stavern and Wilder. You can call in at – I'm sorry, I'm over here – you can call at 347-215-7598. Make sure to download the app, or you can tweet us your questions at Leaving the Ring. But anyways, this is the interesting thing about Dante Wilder. He's got the height. He was the wild card of the Olympics. He won the bronze. He's compelled a very cush record because he hasn't really fought anybody of note. You know, the guy that he was supposed to fight, a lot could agree that, was a suspect dive. But Stavern is by far the biggest threat. Now, let me ask you this, Gabriel. Do you think Wilder is by far the biggest threat to Stavern? Because I don't think so. I think this is a matchup that if it wasn't the title on the line, they probably would have came across sometime in some point. But fortunately it has the title that is the prize for them to grab. Stavern having the title and trying to hold on to that title. What do you think?
It's a tough matchup. I mean, that issue, RA is ready for us. I think I threw you by texting you that number. It's a tough matchup, you know, between both guys, and that's leaving out experience. Stavern is what, a 6'2", 80-inch reach. Wilder is a little bigger than that, 6'6", 83-inch reach. But so that, you know, the reaches are actually kind of comparable. I think most people are probably looking at it like Stavern, because he doesn't fight like a long distance, you know, long range kind of guy and use all of that 80-inch reach. But you know, I think he's going to surprise Wilder a bit, and then he's going to be able to get in. He's going to be able to slip that jab, and I think he's going to throw multiples. Now, you know, he did do a bit of waiting against Areola at times and looking for his shot, but that's a different guy. It's a totally different kind of fight. And I think Stavern has shown that he can heat up, he can take some shots, he can keep coming. Wilder is, somebody on Twitter earlier, we're kind of having this discussion, he is the wild card.
Right.
He's had, 32 knockouts and 32 fights, but correct me if I'm wrong, maybe Malik Scott it was a big test, but that's somebody that he had sparred with. This is really the first fight that is a fight where he is matched evenly, if not, you know, the deck is a little stacked against him. I don't think Wilder's been in that situation since the Olympics. So I'm very curious. I mean, the Olympics, he shined. He was able to do some things and surprise people with limited experience. But this is a whole different game, and there aren't, you know, the rounds are going to be longer. There's much more at stake, and it's a pro fight with no headgear against a dangerous puncher in Stavern. You know, we'll kind of wait a little bit here to make our picks, but, you know, I think that that's a good question. Is Wilder the most dangerous guy that Stavern has faced? And, well, I don't know. We'll find out after the fight, but I think you can't take it away from Areola, who had championship fight experience, you know?
All right. Give me so
I think I think the answer would be no until the fight tells us otherwise.
Okay, but let me patch in our guest here with us on Leaving Ring. Let's see. Do we have the Rugged Man with us?
Hey, how you doing? Did it work?
Oh yeah, it works good, brother. I can hear you clear, man. Hey, thanks for coming on a Sunday. You know, I know the playoffs are happening right now, so hey, much appreciated.
I don't watch any sports except boxing.
Hey, I'm with you on that,
right,
bro?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that, too. Everybody's talking about the game, and I'm just like, I don't really care. I want to break down some heavyweight tape. Thank you for coming through, though.
I saw somebody say that, like, hey, you know, how are they going to do it during the play? I'm like, I didn't even know there was a football game on.
Yeah, seriously, I don't schedule my life around it. First off, where have you been, man? You've been on tour for quite a while. Tell us a little bit about your travels.
Well, yeah, last year I did 100 shows, and the year before that I did 150 shows. So I do them all over the world. You know, November and December was all through Europe, though. So I did, you know, from Paris to Berlin to, you know, all over the damn, from the Netherlands to you know, Czech Republic, you know, all over Europe, you know. So, yeah.
What's hip hop like in all those places? That's got to be a trip.
Well, nah, you know what it is. It's a different era. So, the culture's worldwide. You know, it doesn't matter where you are on the planet. Hip hop is big. It doesn't matter if you're in Japan, if you're in Europe, if you're in Australia. It's huge all over the globe. So, you know, the fans love it worldwide. You know.
What's some of the people that we don't know about that you saw that blew you away out there?
What do you mean, some European artists?
Yeah, yeah. There's people that would like, you know, because Americans, we stay in our little bubble. You know, we kind of just think American, we look American. We think the heavyweights are dead because we don't have a heavyweight American champion.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the thing is, the two kids I brought with me aren't the most known in the U.S., but they're U.S. artists, both from California. There's a kid named Locksmith. And the other kid is he was 16 years old when I discovered him. He's 17 now. His name is Afro, a.k.a. All Flows Reach Out. And he's a tremendous, tremendous talent. And I think the people will get to hear. When I took him to Europe, just through the internet and me posting up some videos and letting him freestyle, every show I did, we'd have like a packed house, sold out show in Greece, in Athens, and they as soon as the kid walked out, oh, Afro, you know, chanting his name, and, you know, all over the globe, they're already saying his kid's name, you know?
Nice.
That's pretty sweet. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, but he's a young kid, but he's coming to New York, And he's going to be working with DJ Premier all week, you know, so they're going to be in the studio. You know, Premier is one of the most legendary hip-hop producers ever, and he's flying out tomorrow to New York, and he's going to be with Premier the whole week doing music and setting them up with some new management. And, you know, that's the young boy on the agenda, you know.
Right, right. Let me ask you, what do you think has changed in hip-hop now from back in the days, all right? What do you think that you wish was still kind of the same, but you just kind of see where it's never going to be there ever again?
Well, you know, that's asked a lot. The difference is that there's a whole lot more corporate financing involved. So, you know, when it gets to that, they want to, you know, do whatever's the most easiest marketable music, just like boxing, just like films. You know, films, they'll put, oh, superhero, do six superhero movies a year because, you know, brain dead people will run to them. It's the same reason why, you know, you could have 10 fights that are top caliber, and then, you know, people still talking about, oh, we need Floyd and Pac only. That's the only fight I care about, you know, like whatever's the most sellable name, you know, and that's the same thing, or easiest to market. So that's the same thing with commercial hip hop and corporations getting involved in the culture, because, you know, Iggy Azalea, she's a, you know, attractive white girl with a fat ass, and, you
right.
know, white faces, you know, they can market her more easy than, say, you know, a super lyrical dude like Rex from Boston or something, you know, like, oh, a black kid that can rhyme really dope and make dope hip hop songs. Which one could they market to little girls in elementary school and you know, high school kids, and, you know, so you know, it's a business. So that's, you know, going to take away from a culture when now really mediocre artists are being taken serious because they're the most known, and the actual, you know, creators of the craft and the great, you know, skilled technicians and lyricists won't be marketed, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely, man.
It seems too like the corporate culture, they don't really want guys talking about all the stuff that's going on, the real stuff. They want something that's catchy. I'm not big on memes, but I always love it when they show lyrics from back in the day, like right next to lyrics that are popular today, and like how much dumber they've gotten. Nobody's talking.
Yeah.
There's no Bob Dylan. There's no, you know, and I'm not even a, Dave's more of a hip-hop fan than I am.
There's no Rakim, yeah.
Oh, no.
Bob Dylan, yeah, he'd have songs where he's talking about, you know, is God on our side, you know, talking about war, you know, wars and stuff like that, and it was deep lyricism. So, and then you had, you know, the hip-hop culture, which took it to the next level, you know, where consciousness went, you know, times 10 with hip-hop culture in the 80s. And now, yeah, now, you know, simplify it, dumb it down, don't give them a voice. And, you know, they'll give you a little bit of a voice if it's kind of following the same agenda that they want, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, listen, I listen to like Immortal Technique right now. I mean, I think those are the only guys, right, you know, that are kind of now broke. I don't know if you want to say they kind of crossed over, but they stick to some topics that if I was to show that to some young kid, they'll go like, it's too lyrical for me. It's, you know, I don't want to follow it. I don't know. Things have really changed, you know. It even goes with boxing, you know. I've always said this. You know, the casual fans, they want to talk about Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather because it's so easy to attack and it's so easy to break down because there's nothing else behind there in history that you can mention to them. Salvador Sanchez, mention Barrera, even talk about Bernard Hopkins, old fights. They don't even know. It's like, you know.
Yeah, they don't know any of them. And then they'll be the quickest ones to say, oh, no, this guy's the best of all time because, you know, that's all they know, you know. So. But that's part of anything. You know, that's part of, you know, like
right.
I said, you could take it, you know, I know about movies, I know about music, I know about boxing, and it's the same in all three. And politics is the same. It's all the same.
Right.
What's easy for the brain to digest is what's going to get discussed because people don't want to be intellectual anymore for some strange reason, you know?
It is strange. There's an anti-intellectual movement in the world. Like, I mean, watching
it's like anti-intellect. Yeah, it's like... If you, you know, bring up truth or facts or reality, then you're either crazy or a hater or who are you? They discredit you as a person or a journalist or a musician or an artist or a creator of whatever the fuck you do. Are we allowed to curse on the show?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
Oh, okay. So, you know, they don't even want to listen to someone that's speaking any kind of truth. All they want to do is attack, you know, the messenger. You know, like, you know, it's a cliche, but that's what they want to do. They go, oh, I don't want to hear that. Boom, who is this person? How dare he say something? You know what I mean? Like, now maybe
right.
listen to the knowledge and you could learn from it, you know?
It's interesting. I remember when I – go ahead, Dave.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish your thought.
I've been a victim of that. It's kind of trippy. You know, when I was breaking all the positives in a row, and I remember I was talking to Victor Conte, and I wrote about it, and he said, now what's going to happen? All these writers are kind of taking your story, and they're recycling and recycling. When you run out of stories to break, they're going to turn on you and start making you the story and start discrediting you when they run out of shit to steal from you. That's exactly what happened. But you know, that kind of happens in any trend.
That's how it always is. And like I said,
yeah.
the same way how I told you, the music industry, political world, it's all the same thing. Because the music thing is the same thing. What they'll do is these mainstream artists that you know have a big corporate push behind them, they study what all the little guys do, all the little indie guys. They'll take their flows, take their lyrics, take their contents, recreate their songs, give them no credit. And then the masses will attack the creator and give, you know, the mainstream, you know, outlet the credit. And because that's what they're being fed. So they don't want to hear the truth and who the true messenger is. They want to give it to the yeah. So I could see that happening in boxing media very easily, you know, like, oh yeah. I remember you doing some of the steroid research. I think I complimented you on some of it because you were breaking some stories ahead of a lot of people. And I was like, wow, shit, I didn't even know that. And then, you know, and I seen some of the discussions with Conte, what he was talking about. He's got his balls on the table with some of this stuff, you know. Putting up the pictures of some fighters with, like, bad acne on their chest. And I'm like, oh, he's kind of out there.
Yeah, he's definitely on his own tree limb, you know. I mean, I've been out there with him a few times, you know. It's...
Definitely
I was
fill up your timeline.
Though. he's a classic example though of people trying to kill the messenger, and I find it interesting that the pictures that he's pulled up. He pulled up, I think, Amir Khan and Jesse Vargas, and went, no, it was yeah. I think he's kind of pointed at Khan, saying he's testing year round. That's what he brought up with him, but he put up Marquez, but he used to work with Jesse Vargas and he used to work with Amir Khan. So I find it interesting when people attack him, but they're like, well, I'm like, wait a minute. Here's a dude that you're calling one of the great cheats of all time, and he's pointing at dudes that he used to work with and saying, there's something going on here. It's weird to me that nobody ever really listens. Maybe they're afraid.
That's the thing, too, is when you've done something dishonest of your own, a lot of ways, then you would know better than other people because you've done it, right? But it's also the easiest way for the public to discredit. Oh, well, why would we listen to him? He's the biggest cheat of them all. Of course he would say that. You know what I mean? So it's easier for people that don't want to believe him to discredit him. You know, I don't know how deep I don't know what you're talking about with the Khan and the other guy. I don't know his story on that. But I'm just saying as a whole, you know, the big scheme of things, that he's the easy guy to discredit. To the average person, because they say, well, he's a cheater, so why would I listen to a cheater? You know, meanwhile, if you want to look at it realistically, you go, yeah, he's a cheater. He knows how to cheat and, you know, what it takes to cheat. So if he's saying this guy's doing something, you know, he might know a little better than us even, you know?
Yeah. When I'm in New York and I want to get some weed, I don't ask a guy that doesn't smoke weed. I ask a guy that knows how to get it, where to get it, get it.
That's
you know?
That's a good point, yeah.
And it isn't easy, apparently. Let's get into some boxing stuff. We got a big fight coming up this week, man. Stiverne Wilder heavyweight title matchup. Do you have any thoughts on it? Are you picking anybody in particular?
See this one. I'm not really. I'm not really that convinced on Wilder yet, because I seen him get rocked by a jab in one fight in the first round. A dude just threw like a sloppy jab and kind of Wilder got, I was like, wait, that jab kind of hurt him, you know, and I never seen him in with nobody yet, you know? So, I'm not convinced yet. So, and Stavern, I seen him box. I seen him hit like a monster. I seen him, you know, run through our boy, you know, the heavyweight Mexican.
Areola.
Jesus Christ. Areola.
Areola.
Yeah, of course. You know, I've seen Stavern fight and look impressive throughout a whole fight where Dante, I see him hit somebody, goes down, okay, and Dante looks a little goofy, a little sloppy doing it, you know? So I'm going to go with the underdog Stavern just because I've seen him look – I've seen him, you know, fight longer fights and seen him, you know, doing what he does, and I think he's a better fighter. But, you know, Wilder hits – you know, harder than, you know, most human beings. So in a fight like that, you know, you get hit, you know, by him, you know, he could hurt whoever he hits. So I'm going to go with Stavern, but, you know, a fighter that hits as hard as Wilder, of course he's going to have a more than a punch's, well, not more, he's going to have that punch's chance, a big punch's chance, you know. Or he might surprise me and be this great phenomenon that everyone else thinks he is. I just haven't seen that yet, you know.
I think that's how I feel about it. Yeah, that's the big question.
Yeah.
Is he the phenomenon? Nobody really knows, you know? I mean, you know what I like about this fight is the height, but, I think you mentioned it earlier, Gable, how Wilder doesn't use that height. But I'm concerned is when Stavern decides to kind of shell up, which he does, and he kind of waits patiently, if Wilder, in my opinion, can discipline himself enough to keep the fight outside – I think the fight drags on a lot later, and it lessens the chance of him getting knocked out by Stavern. You know, that's what I'm looking at.
Wilder also doesn't I haven't seen nothing from Wilder. I mean, he does, his fights don't last long, but I haven't seen nothing that
right.
makes me think, oh, he's a patient, smart fighter.
Right.
You know, but I said, let's see. You know, I this is the fight. It's a great matchup because it's going to show, it's going to prove a lot to whoever the hell wins it, you know? So, no, it's going to prove more for Wilder because if Stavern actually just beats the dude up, everyone's going, oh, yeah, he was a fluke the whole time, you know, boom, boom.
Right,
boom.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So
right.
You know, it proves a lot more for Wilder if he goes in there and bangs out this dude and well, you know, but if it's a fast one, then we're still going to be like, I don't know. Can he do Klitschko? Cause Klitschko could box him, you know, we'll see. I'm looking forward to this fight a lot, actually. Yeah
same here.
It's been a while since I've, you know, and the guys I respect have said, like, I've watched Wilder in the gym and he's, you know, he's a prospect, you know, he's kind of a developing project. Now he's a contender, but like they claim he can box well and he's much better in the gym, and we just haven't seen it. But like watching his last fight, it was like the senseless beating of a fat guy, beating up Jason Gavern, who really didn't have a shot, but except that he just could take punches and last. And you're right, like even with that, like it went a little bit longer. I still didn't come away feeling like I knew much about him. I mean, it was like a 4-round fight. I'm like, okay, he can beat up this guy who has no shot.
This is the fight. This is the one.
Yeah.
This is his time to show and prove. And if Wilder looks brilliant against this dude, Stavern, then, you know, America's going to be like, wow, he's going to look, he could kick Klitschko's ass. You know, if he runs through Wilder and looks brilliant and like, wow, this is the one that's going to get Americans all like, wow, we got someone that's going to take out the Klitschko because, you know, we have nobody. So,
<Right.
laughs> you know, what would be best for boxing as a whole would be for Wilder to, you know, put a brutal beating on this dude and look amazing and look like an unbeatable force, then everyone's going to demand, okay, we need Klitschko versus Wilder, and it's going to be a huge, huge thing, you know? So that is what is best for the sport. If Stavern just, you know, beats this dude up and knocks him out, everyone's going to be like, Wilder was always a joke. Stavern's not even that good. It's just Wilder sucks. And, Klitschko, it won't be as big of a deal as our big hyped American knockout artist winning the fight, you know? So.
Right. It's true.
Right.
I always wonder what's better for boxing, you know? Oh, go ahead, Dave.
Right. I got a question for you, all right? Right now, we saw last year 50 Cent try to get into the promoter seat. Now we're seeing Jay-Z, Roc Nation. Let me ask you your thoughts about that. What do you think about these rap artists that do bring, they have deep pockets and they do bring some star quality power, trying to get into that promoter's seat. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's great because boxing, you know, we're horrible at PR, man. We don't know how to promote fights to get them mainstream. We don't know how to cross them over. You know, UFC was going, like, everybody was on UFC's dick for mad years, and that's kind of, you know, they're still doing good, but it's, you know, I think it was a little bit even more hyped a couple years back. But, you know, boxing, we're hurting. Like, our biggest fighters, nobody in the mainstream cares about them except for Pacquiao and Mayweather, you know? So if you get a mainstream figure like a Jay-Z or a 50 Cent say, hey, I'm going to come promote these guys, they got, you know, strong Twitter game, strong Facebook game, strong, you know, not personally, but, you know, and 50 Cent is on that damn Instagram and, you know, the media, they talk about it on these websites that wouldn't normally cover the fight. You know, I think that's good for the sport, you know, rather than some regular rich guy that nobody knows who he is putting some money behind it. I think that they're opening doors. And Jay has always been a mastermind businessman. So to have his team and Roc Nation and them getting involved, probably some big things are going to happen, you know. And I see that they just signed Andre Ward, and I'm excited about that because Ward is a waste right now, and he's one of the most talented guys on the planet, and we're all sitting there like, the guy doesn't even fight. Everybody has to say, oh, Ward's great, but he doesn't even fight, you know? So now that all the legal stuff might be getting out of the way, and he's got, like, you know, Roc Nation got great lawyers. They got a good legal team, better than what the hell Andre Ward had, so they'll be able to probably maneuver something that he could get his ass back in the ring sooner than later now, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, he's talking about springtime. He's going to get back into that ring. I mean, you know, I like the fact that Roc Nation.
I hope he fights a light touch for the comeback, though, because you know, he's not a knockout artist. He's a brilliant technician. So, you know, you might have to knock a little ring rust off of you, you know. But I'd like to see him, not a light touch, but not. I don't think he should go even against the top guy in his comeback fight. I think he should take one light touch and then fight a top guy, you know. I don't even think he should do Jesus Christ, I'm so out of my head right now. I can't even remember fighters' names. Jesus Christ,
Chavez?
Who's in his weight division? No, he'll beat Chavez. That's cake. Jesus Christ. Yeah, he dominated Frotch, made Frotch look like an amateur. But Frotch is a good, strong a fighter with a huge, huge heart. So, you know, I don't think he should fight Frotch on his first fight.
Right, yeah, because you know, to tell you the truth, I think in the rematch with Frotch, because that first fight, Frotch looks so stunned, but this time around, I think he's going to go in the rematch a little bit more comfortable and go, okay, he gave me all that I can handle, gave me the best, but this time I'm going to go for broke. I think the mentality what Frotch brings is a lot more dangerous in a rematch than it was the first time around. Man.
I don't know. I think him going for broke is just going to make him look just as sloppy and just as, you know, Ward is, and I love Frotch as a fighter. I love him, man. He's an action fighter, and he's got one of the biggest hearts, and he fights every single fighter, you know. I like Frotch as a fighter. Sometimes I don't like some of the stuff he says. You know, he's a little arrogant. But, hey, that's why he goes in the ring with all these great fighters and tries to fight everybody, because that arrogance, you know. So I actually, which would piss a lot of UK people off, and this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I rate Frotch higher than Calzaghe. And that's going to be, people are going to, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Ari's an idiot. Calzaghe's, you know, this great, you know. But I'm just going for a man. Look at the resumes of who fought how many fighters in their prime. And yeah, Frotch has some losses, but, you know, come on, that resume is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's fight after fight after fight after fight. He'd fight like six top guys in a row, you know, and put everything into it. Where like, I think Frotch in a year and a half or two, or two, I don't know how many years it was exactly, you know, his resume, you know, doubled Calzaghe's top guy resume in a year or two. He did that, you know, so, yeah.
I couldn't agree more, man. I mean, I think a lot of folks right now don't appreciate what he's done and accomplished. You talk about, you know, when we talk about great fighters,
I don't mean to cut you off, but all that said, I still think if Ward's on top of his game, he would dominate Frock just as easy in the rematch. You know, that, but maybe I'm wrong, but except unless if he fights him right now as the first fight back, I think he needs a warm up fight before he steps in the ring with anybody on Frock's caliber. You know.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Ward is really above class of a lot of guys, man. I mean, you talk about ring generalship, intelligence. The guy has pretty much all the package except for that power punch. It's really not there. But, all right, let me ask you this.
And his other thing lacking in the package was management, getting him all the right places after that. You know, he was managing himself, trying to leave the situation he was in with Goosen and that was a horrendous nightmare for the guy. Now maybe that he has some, you know, Jay in his corner, he's going to have somebody to, hey, look, you got to get in the ring and be somebody. You know, you're wasting your prime of your career, you know. Before you know it, the guy's going to be back in the ring losing fights to scrubs. He's going to be too old, you know. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I worry about him in that. I don't think he's the kind of guy that's going to try to please the crowd. But you're right. I mean, sitting out that long, like, you know, it's like Wilder in the gym. Like, I don't care how good you are in the gym. There's no substitute for live fire, you know, in the ring, being away. Especially, like you said, he's kind of a rhythm fighter. He's a technician. He's not a guy that's like, all right, I can just kind of wing it and land a big shot at some point and get this guy out of there.
Exactly. So say he goes in there rusty. Somebody knocks his equilibrium off. He's all foggy and you know, he gets dominated for 2-3 rounds because of the rust. And then he, you know, gets dropped a couple times, right? And then, okay, he gets in the rhythm and he boxes the guy nice for the next few rounds or whatever. He don't have it where, like, okay, I'm behind. I got knocked down a few times. I'm going to stop this dude. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what – he doesn't have that in most of the fights. But on the flip side is, you know, think about Pernell Whitaker. Remember when he fought that Cuban and the Cuban dropped him a few times? Who was the Cuban? Hurtadas or something?
Yeah.
Whitaker got dropped twice, was losing the fight on all the cards. You're like, oh, man, Whitaker doesn't knock anybody out. He's going to lose his fight. And all of a sudden, boom, and I think it was the 10th, 11th round, 9th round. I don't remember what round it was, but knocked the dude right through the ropes. Bow, 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 bow. And like, oh,
yeah, it was like five consecutive punches in a row. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't never, when you're at that level, you can never count nobody out, actually. But, you know, it would just be harder for him to have a miracle turnaround, you know. So.
That's such a great fight. God, I haven't watched that one. I haven't watched that one in a minute. I need to pull that one up on YouTube.
So I haven't watched it since it happened, I don't think. I just remember it live. Where I was like, yo, man, Whitaker's going to lose this fight. This Cuban's going to whoop. Yo, he's whooping Whitaker. Oh, shit, Whitaker's down. Oh, man, this is crazy. Then all of a sudden, you know, the great one, he turned it around and knocked the dude out. Like, oh, shit, he didn't even knock out artist. How did he do that?
He turned it around because that big payday with Oscar De La Hoya was about to slip away, you know, get out of his hands. So he turned it around with that punch because that was the thing that he needed to secure was that fight with De La Hoya. That was the fight, remember?
Historically, you're schooling me because I forgot that was the fight before the Oscar fight. I didn't even know that. I thought that was after the Oscar fight. Wow, that's crazy. That makes it even that much more exciting because I didn't even remember that part of it.
He
would have lost
that
multi-million-dollar payday. Wow.
Right.
I didn't even remember that piece of it. Yeah.
He went into like seek and destroy mode, and I remember watching. There's a great. You probably find it on YouTube. They do a ringside, you know, the ESPN ringside with about Pernell Whitaker's career, and they. They ask him, like, you know, when you got knocked down, like, moments into that fight, what were you thinking? And Pernell just goes, oops. It's basically just like, fuck it. Time to strap it on and be a legend, man. Go get it done. But I didn't even think about that, Dave. You know, yeah, it's also like, there goes my millions. I better knock this dude the hell out.
Yeah.
Remember when, which one was it, when Terry Norris, right before the De La Hoya fight, he got knocked out by Keith Mullins, man, like by a guy with 14 wins and like 4 losses or 5, like a guy, he was a good fighter, but he had a horrendous record. And he had that Oscar De La Hoya fight coming up And the dude knocked him out, stopped him. It was crazy. I was like, oh, man, Terry Norris, what'd you do? It was crazy.
He was supposed to be he was supposed to fight Cheeto, I think, too, at some point. And then, you know, he just, yeah, Terry just.
Who, Terry Norris?
He
lost.
Am
I getting the fight wrong? Was it supposed to be Cheeto? No, I think it was De La Hoya. It was before the De La Hoya fight.
But I think, yeah, I think they talked about him for that. But, I mean, once he got knocked out, it was kind of. That was kind of it. But let me ask you this, just getting back to the present. And I know this is – it's funny. It's like how I can gauge a real fight fan. Like I met a real fight fan. He's like the guitar player in this band that my wife plays in. And he's a big fight fan, and he didn't once bring up Mayweather-Pacquiao last night. We're talking about all these other fights. So, but I got to bring it up to you. It looks like it's going to happen. It's starting. They say it's closer than it's ever been. They're going to make a decision or an announcement by the end of the month. But – we all know that, like, 2010 was when they were both at the peak of their powers, basically, or the last.
Yeah, we all know that it's ridiculous. You know, the funny thing is I always make the – when Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns fought the first fight, they were both in their primes. They were both scary
right.
monsters. Sugar Ray was, like, an athletic, insane, you know, just an incredible technician, and he was stopping people, and Tommy Hearns was a barbarian that could knock you out cold, and these guys were in their prime, and they got in a ring together. That's what they did, you know? And then they fought that rematch years later, and everyone was like, ah, why are we going to watch these two old guys? These guys are old. This fight, why are they rematching now? Meanwhile, in the rematch, they were both younger than Floyd and Pacquiao are now. In the
right.
rematch that everybody didn't care about.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because
they fought in their prime. Yeah, and the rematch, people are like, what? I don't care about that rematch. They're too old. It's like, yeah, they're like 2, 3, 4 years younger than Pac and Mayweather are now. You know?
Is this going to be like
that, is the point.
That like a super hot chick, you chase her down, you think it's great. You get her in the bed, and it's just the worst sex ever. Just kind of lays there, nothing's going on. Is
nah,
that
you know what it's like. You know what it's like. It's like when there was the banging, you know, chick in high school. She was the cheerleader, you know, best titties, best ass, and she wouldn't even speak to you. And you were like, oh man, I'd do anything for that girl. And then you meet her 10 years drunk and fat at a bar 10 years later, and you're like. Yo, I banged that girl that I used to want to bang. It didn't really count, you know. She's fat and drunk and at the bar, and 10 years later, she looked like, you know. So that's what it's like. You're getting the high school cheerleader 10 years too late, you know. So.
Hey, but you still got it. You still got it. So I gotta say,
well, you can say, yeah. It's like, you know what it's like. It's like, you know. You know, somebody go and you know, oh, you know, when, you know, like when a young dude, like a 40-year-old dude, like married like an 80-year-old Elizabeth Taylor, like, yeah, I got Elizabeth Taylor. It's like, yeah, you're a loser, and she's 80, you know?
Yeah.
That's not Elizabeth Taylor. That's an 80-year-old corpse. What are you talking about?
With her hair.
Yeah.
Could you?
Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
Say it again.
Exactly. I know you've been on the road this whole time. So it's probably harder to keep track of things in the last year. And it was honestly one of the worst boxing years I can remember. 2014 sucked.
I was on the road. Here's the problem: when you're touring overseas a lot, is you know you'll be in some. You know, you'll be in like a farmland in the middle, you're trying to get like a little, it'll be 5 a.m. and you're trying to get the internet to get like a stream of it, and it'll freeze up and you're like 30 seconds freezing up, and you're like, and people are like, who do you think won the fight? I'm like, I saw like snapshots of it in the, you know, it was like some freezing up. So I didn't really get to see as many of the fights as I would like to see this year. But what was some of the better fights? Oh man, I seen... You know, my idol, you know, B-Hop, I seen him go the distance with Kovalev.
Right.
That was a tough one to watch. You know, that was a tough one to watch. But I saw that fight. We were in the airport. We were flying to somewhere, and we were able to get the internet connection of Pacquiao versus Algeria. Or Algeria, how you say it, the Long Island boy?
Algeria.
We got to see that fight. you know, I saw quite a few fights too. I saw a Rigondeaux fight. I saw Bradley. Name some fights this year, and I'll talk about them. I'll tell you if I saw them or not.
Well, I was wondering if you got to see Terrence Crawford in Gamboa.
Yeah. I saw Crawford Gamboa and seen him, you know. But Gamboa was moving up in weight, right? Wasn't the guy too big for him and just schooled him and out
yeah.
and beat the shit out of him? Was that what it was? Yeah, I saw that fight.
Yeah. I'm just curious what you think of Crawford as a.
That's what
you know,
before the interview started, I told you, I said, look, the last 8 months,
yeah.
like, you could tell me any piece of boxing history. I know so much of it. The last 8 months, I missed a lot of the, you know, very important fights. But oh, I saw
you
know what else I saw Canelo
you didn't
Lara.
Miss much, all right.
I saw the Canelo versus Lara fight, and I thought,
I thought
Lara won by a round or two, but he disappointed me. I thought he would, you know, win 8 rounds, you know, 9 rounds easy and look very dominant. You know, it was a very debatable fight. It could have went either way. Myself, I'd say, yeah, maybe a round or two to Lara, but it was very close, but I thought he was going to school Canelo. I was like, yeah, he's gonna put on a clinic to that guy. But you know, super super close fight. You know, I thought it was entertaining, but I know everybody hated it because Lara did a lot of running. You know, so
let me ask you this, man. Let me ask you this really quick. Three fighters right now. Should they continue or should they retire? I'll name the three guys. Bernard Hopkins talking about making a comeback this year. Should he continue or should he retire? Danny Garcia and Broner's rap career, should they continue or should they retire on that?
Oh, Hopkins, there's nothing else that man has to prove, you know? I mean,
right.
I guess if you know, against Superman, if he doesn't get, you know, if he doesn't get the title shot against the Kovalev you know, fight the winner of Kovalev and Jesus Christ. I told you I'm rusty today. Kovalev. Who's Kovalev fighting? The
Pascal.
Quebec dude. Yeah, Pascal. That's right. Yeah. If Superman doesn't sign for that, maybe Hopkins wants to fight Superman and get that title. But I don't even want to see him do that. I just want him to retire. I'd like to see him retire.
Same here.
You know, and he's my favorite. He's my favorite fighter, you know, of the past, you know, 20 years, you know. So, but, you know, he's 50 years old now, and what else can he do? Like, what else can he do? Win another title, you know? But, I mean, if he won another title at 50, I don't think he's going to retire because I think he's going to want to try to get a title at 50, you know? So, and as far as Adrian Broner rapping, I don't know about his rapping, but I think mentally all the, you know, he has a huge ego. I think mentally the abuse he took after he lost, you know, from the public, which he deserved because, you know, when you're that arrogant,
right.
you know, you got to, you know, and you talk like the way you talk, you got to expect people to talk the same way back to you when you lose, you know. So, but I don't think he took it very well. I think he's very insecure and you know, not going to do very good in the rest of his career,
You think it's fair, man, when you hear folks go like, well, Broner's arrogant because he's coming from that hip-hop era and he's bringing that hip-hop, you know, facade over. Do you think that's even true to that? Because when I hear guys say that, I'm like, man, that has nothing to do with hip-hop, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's very, you know, humble people in hip-hop. But, you know, on the flip side, there is that, you know, from day one, you know, I'm the best on the mic, you know. So, yeah, I'm the best in the ring. So I could see a little, you know. And I think what they're talking about is how Mayweather is considered part of this hip-hop generation. Look, I got money and cars, but that's not really hip-hop. That's like commercial brain-dead, you know, kind of, you know, world star hip hop more than hip hop, you know.
Right.
So
yeah, world star.
It could go either way though, but he's a world star champion. He's a champion of the world star era, you know, like where you eat pussy at a strip club, and people are gonna talk about you, you know. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the kid does know how to keep himself out there in the news, man. But you know,
I got to say this, though. I told this to my partner here, Gabriel, just the other day, and I even said it on Twitter. I was like, hey, if the Floyd Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, it, you know, even happens, or even because we're closer than ever of them talking about making it happen, we have to really think.
Of course we are. Of course we are, because Pacquiao is the most human ever right now. So
right,
of course
right.
That's why we're closer than ever.
So what I'm saying is, I think we got to thank Canelo and Cotto for them talking about making their match in May. I think that's what made the major push for Floyd to go, hey, I got to do something. I got to do something big to take the talk away from them.
Yeah, well. Yeah, and on the flip side of that is who else is there for Floyd? What else can he do? You know, what else can he do? And you know, Pacquiao hasn't knocked the guy out in years. He doesn't have that. Like when he fought Barrera, Pacquiao, you know, the first fight, he looked like, yo, this is like a superhuman. This isn't even a human, you know? We just didn't think he was big enough to fight a guy like Floyd, you know? So then when he moved up in weights and was, you know, running through competition, the big guys too, we're like, wow, this guy's like a superhuman in a lot of ways, you know? So it was a threat. And you go, yeah, technically Floyd is a better technician, but, you know, Floyd has problems with guys that are fast. Floyd has problems with guys that give, you know, bizarre angles, you know, like gives them angles. And, you know, Pacquiao was the master of both of those. So, you know, whether maybe Floyd was better or not, Pacquiao was the guy with a knockout punch that could test it. Okay, now we're going to see all these weird angles, the speed, the guy that's actually faster than Floyd. I'm not saying better than Floyd. I'm saying was faster. So there was a time where he was a legitimate threat to Floyd. But, you know, the public doesn't expect Floyd to dare to be great. They don't expect it because they go, why would he have to do that? You know, so the thing is, I remember when Sergio Martinez was at the top and everyone's like, I would go, yo, why didn't he go and challenge for that title? That would make him one of the greats if he goes up there and does that. And then everyone's like, no, you're just expecting too much from Floyd because that guy's too big. But then how come Cotto could go up and do it? You know, how come you're not, when that fight was announced, no one was like, well, Martinez is too big because why would Cotto do that? You know, like, so Cotto could do it, but maybe, you know, there's things that they don't, you know, the guys that dared to be great, dared to be great. And if you say he should fight Golovkin, people would be like, yo, that's ridiculous. Why the hell would he have to do that? He doesn't have to. But if we were talking about the era of the all-time greats, people would be like, hell yeah, he's one of the greats. Of course he would fight Golovkin and beat him. But we're in an era where it's protect the guy that you like. So it's a different era, you know, where it's like, no, he shouldn't have to do that. Why should he have to do that, you know? And they have all these excuses why their favorite. Like, look at this right now. Cotto beat the shit out of Sergio Martinez. Martinez was a legitimate middleweight. I was shocked. Not shocked, but I was like, wow, Cotto's the middleweight champion of the world? How the hell is that even possible? I think Cotto's a super fighter, boom, boom, he's a good fighter, but what was going to tell me that he could move up and wait and beat Martinez? But here's the thing. Now, Cotto is the middleweight, one of the middleweight champions of the world.
Right.
In the old days, the obvious thing would be to say he has to fight Golovkin. That's obvious in the old days. You are the middleweight champion.
Right.
Golovkin is middleweight champion. You guys fight. But now we live in this, no, protect the named fighters. And now he should fight Canelo at middleweight, even though Canelo's not a middleweight, have them fight, and that's the ultimate fight. He shouldn't fight Golovkin. If you tell people Cotto should fight Golovkin, why would he do that? You know, Golovkin's too good for him. Well, Golovkin's too strong and scary for him. It's like, wait, but they're both the middleweight champions. They're supposed to fight.
Right.
But they go, no, you know, this fight with Canelo's the good fight because they're both big names and it'll sell a lot, and it's not like, you know, a scary fight compared to if it was Golovkin. Golovkin's just suicide. It's like, wait, Floyd Patterson fought Sonny Liston. You got to do what you got to do, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's too now. I mean, everybody will defend whoever the champion is. They'll say, well, there's no money in that. It makes no sense. You know, Golovkin's not going to bring any money on that. To the end of this table, so why make that fight happen? I think people
Everybody's an armchair. Oh, sorry, go ahead, my bad.
No, go for it. Yeah, I agree with you. Everybody's an armchair manager
an armchair Don King and shit. Like, well, the money's not there, so. But that's the problem. They learned that from the fighters. They did learn that from the fighters. That's
right.
That's the Floyd mentality school of fighting, where, you know, back in the day, fighters was like, yo, I'm going to go up to. That's why I always mention Bernard Hopkins when I talk about great achievements and greatness and greatness and greatness, because he had that throwback mentality where he fought, you know, these guys that he wasn't supposed to, and moved up and fought people like, yo, why, what the hell is he doing that for? Are you crazy? You know, and then he'd go against all odds, and many of the times he you know, shocked the world on many, 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 many occasions. So, you know, he dared to be great, where the new era is like, well, it's not a good business move, so I'm not going to do it. But I thought you're great. If you're that great, it is a good business move, because you're going to look great and defeat that guy that you're not supposed to beat. But that's not the era we're in right now. We're in that era, like you said, where they go, there's no money in it.
Peter Quillin turned down $1.4 million to fight freaking Matt Korobov. He wouldn't fight him. And then Andy Lee turns around and knocks Korobov out in a great fight, really fun fight. I don't know if you got to see
really
it, but it's
fight.
Like, yeah. Nobody risks anymore.
I didn't see that fight, but I heard about the knockout that he was losing, right? Andy Lee was losing.
Right.
And then stopped him with, what was it, a body punch or something?
He hurt him with a right hook. They were kind of starting to exchange. I mean, they both were bringing heavy leather, and I think they were just – I didn't look at it as he was losing. I kind of had the edge to Korobov, but it wasn't
well,
like
I didn't
was
see it. I didn't see it. That's what I'm
right,
saying.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. I just heard on social media afterwards, people were like, wow, shout out to Andy Lee. He came from behind. See the fight.
Yeah,
I can't really speak on it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And that's the perception, is that he was losing. But it was a really tight fight. But the bottom line is that these guys – we're willing to risk nobody. You know, we're prize fighters. And when you point out Hopkins, and I'm a Trinidad guy, so it always kind of, I get a little upset when I hear that name. But you're right. He's one of the great strategists in and out of the ring. He picked the right dudes, and there were challenges. Kelly Pavlik was considered to be dangerous, but he was able to maneuver him, get him the right way, you know.
One thing is, you take a guy like Trinidad now, and they try to rewrite history and be like, oh, Hopkins beat these guys like Trinidad. It's like, yo, you idiots. Trinidad was like 40-0. And I was the only human being. And I predicted a lot of fights wrong, but that particular fight, I was telling everybody, you know, I was like, no, my man Hopkins got too much at stake. This is his first big name in years, where he fought great fighters, but this was a name. Like, this is, if he loses this, they're going to say, his middleweight reign. You know, look what happens when he stepped up the name, you know, and then he didn't come to the table. I'm like, Hopkins is going to pull this off. And, you know, Trinidad just obliterated Joppy, like a bloody obliteration,
him
a million times, and manhandled this dude. Like Tito in his fight with Joppy looked like damn Mike Tyson, you know? So now history, they go, well, he fought little guys like, you know, Trinidad. It's like, no, Trinidad ran through 154, obliterated the two up and coming guys that were supposed to be great at that division. You know, the David Reeds and the Fernando Vargas. Those guys were like heavily hyped by their networks and everyone. Wow! And then he comes to middleweight, and he was supposed to win that tournament. You know, and he was the top runner. Everybody knew he was going to win. All these other guys, this was a big thing for Don King to build Trinidad as a bigger star at middleweight. Everyone knew that, and everyone knew Hopkins was going to lose. So now historically they go, no, he fought Trinidad, so what? Like, you guys are just ignorant. You don't even wish you guys could, you know, rewind history, you know, and look at it when it was happening, you know, because I was the only one saying, well, you know, I'm sure not in the boxing world, but like in the public, you know,
right.
I'd be like, oh, Trinidad's going to lose. They're like, are you retarded? Did you see his last fights? Hopkins can't knock anyone out anymore. You know, yeah. Hopkins, 38 years old or 37 years, however old he was, they were all acting like he was an old man back then. And that was like 13, 14 years ago, you know. So.
I remember, you know, the majority of folks that were picking against Hopkins not to win that fight was they were going off the Anton Echoes. You remember that? Because they were like, well, Anton Echoes was able to manhandle him. Do you imagine what Tito Trinidad is going to do to him? But they kind of forget, though, that he's, you know, he fought through all of that. And the surprising part for me was how he went in there and he fooled everybody by just boxing, man. Like, he really changed his career in a flip of a dime after that fight, and made it very, I guess you could say, kind of surreal to go, wow, this Philly fighter decided not to do that rough and tumble type of style and make longevity. I mean, you got to appreciate what he's done to right now. He's made longevity by changing himself and kind of just going into the motion of saying, you know what, I'm not going to stick to the same style. I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to switch it up. And he's done it, you know? So, yeah, absolutely, I agree with you, man. You got to appreciate
He's an alien. He's an alien, like he says, and he's a scientist. He's an alien scientist, you know. Guy's unbelievable. And here's something I say about Bernard Hopkins, too. He has such a great career that you could chop his career into two or three careers, or two careers at least, and he is a Hall of Famer as two fighters. Like if he retired after the Trinidad fight, boom, Hall of Fame fighter. You know, even before that, boom, Hall of Fame fighter. If you cut it in half, and his resume with you know, going up and light heavyweight with Tarver and Pavlik and being the oldest man, 48 and 46, Hall of Famer again. You know, so there's two Hall of Fame careers, and then the first Hall of Fame career is, you know, by the time he beat Trinidad, I think he had just beat Carlos Monzon's record at middleweight, 14 defenses. I think Monzon had 13,
yeah,
something like that. My numbers might be a little wrong, but it's roughly.
I think you're right. It's 14, 15,
and
like
then,
that.
Yeah. And then as a whole, if you know, go into the whole middleweight reign, it was a 20 defenses at middleweight, you know. So, you know, he's a Hall of Famer two or three times in a row, you know, as two different fighters. You know, he did more in half of his career twice than most Hall of Famers. Not most Hall of Famers, you can't say that, but a lot of Hall of Famers.
But he's close to that. But let me ask you this, man. I mean, in the end of this third period of his career, which is the late right now, him going to, what, be 50 years old, you think it's fair for guys like myself and Montoya to go, hey, great, everything that he's been doing as at an older age, but the nickname Alien, but how about the test, though, man? I mean, like, is it fair for us to ask for a test from him? Because he's still being very competitive with younger fighters out there, and doesn't that kind of strike you like, wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. And but the world that we live in with PEDs and enhancements, don't you think it's fair for us to go, hey, man, should you test to see if you're doing this clean?
I guess it's fair to ask any fighter. You know what I mean? The thing is with Hopkins, you guys probably know him personally too, I'm sure, you know. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. He doesn't do drugs. His idea of cheating on a diet is having a piece of cheesecake after he wins a fight. He doesn't do caffeine except for, what drink is it? One of them caffeinated drinks once in a while. Like he takes care of his body. And plus, as soon as the fight's over, he's back in the gym training. There's no, a lot of other fighters are drinking, smoking, you know, doing drugs. Or if they're not doing drugs, they're smoking and drinking and partying and getting fat. That was never a problem with him. So there are fighters like, you know, Archie Moore in the past, before they had all them enhancement drugs, you know, that were able to stay at the top of their game and fight some top guys in their late 40s. And you know, it existed before the drugs existed. So, yeah, of course, you know, asking any fighter to take a test, you know, why not? Why not ask it, you know? But, you know, he's one of the guys that, you know, the odds are that, he took care of himself a lot better than a lot of people. So I will put my money on Hopkins being clean before a lot of other fighters, is what I'm saying, you know. So.
Right. That's a true Bernard Hopkins fan right there, brother. Hey, you know, we got one more question for you, brother, and then we'll let you go. Floyd Mayweather, I know, is the criticism. He hasn't fought anybody, and if he doesn't fight Manny, it's not going to solidify him as an all-time great. Do you think that still holds truth, man? Like, even if he fights, man, that's the big if it does happen this year, do you think it really, honestly, it's going to affect him? I mean, in my opinion, fighting Manny now doesn't do anything because he didn't fight him when the time was in 2010 when it really did matter.
Oh, I think that Floyd missed the big opportunities to prove, you know, all-time great status. You know, there were some big fights he could have took and some big risks he could have took. As far as all-time great talent, you know, I think it's obvious Floyd's up there. You know, he's an all-time he's a great, great talent. I don't know, all-time great. Well, you know, we also, you know, all-time, we're talking about, you know, Willie Pep and Ezzard Charles, and, you know, there's a lot of great fighters in history, so I don't know. But, yeah, I think that he didn't take the risks where he should have took the risks, and I think that's why I don't rate him as high as Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, that era of fighters, you know, and the fighters before that. Because there's not the initial what fight. If you go, what is the fight or fights that make him an all-time great? What is the win that he has? The thing that makes Floyd great is the longevity, but it's also that's part of picking the fights, you know? So
right.
He had Diego Corrales in his prime. People go, he's weight drained or whatever, but you know that's also Diego Corrales came in like that. What are you going to do, you know? So he has a Diego Corrales name back in 2002
right.
or something like that. And then a lot of the people were positioned at the right times and right weight classes for him to fight, you know? So, you know, I guess he has a Miguel Cotto on his resume. You know, who in your opinion, are the biggest wins to make, say, hey, you know, this is an all-time great fighter. Who are they? You know, it's not Zab Judah, it's
right.
not Gaddy. Those aren't names that, you know.
I think the problem with him, and I know that the Floyd Mayweather fans are going to be pissed about this. You know, they're going to be, oh, you guys are just known. All three of you guys are known for being Floyd Mayweather haters. But here's my point with that: his resume is very. It's very dateable. You can debate it so much, like fighting Arturo Gatti. Fighting Oscar De La Hoya. I mean, he fought these guys. He was in a position of fighting these guys when they were not even at their peak yet. You know, and that's my problem with is like, okay, if you're going to be great, then you should have fought Miguel Cotto when he was a monster at 147.
Well, that's the thing is when Cotto's undefeated with no losses, and you know, why are you going to wait for him to take two brutal beatdowns to fight him? You know, that's what he does, you know.
Right.
Pacquiao got knocked out cold. You know, he got outboxed and knocked out – not outboxed, but he lost the decision and then he outboxed Bradley in the rematch. So, and he hasn't looked like a monster in how many fights?
Yeah.
When's the last time you're like, wow, this guy looks ferocious, scary? You know, I mean, the last one against Algieri – you know, he was dropping him, but he was still getting tagged, and you know, he was getting, you know,
right.
It wasn't like, wow,
yeah.
This guy looks like a superhuman. It just, wow, he got some knockdowns. So,
right,
you know, I don't know.
Fighting Zab after he lost to Baldemir, you know,
yeah, well, that was other
stuff
ones
like
too,
that.
You know, but the thing is, yeah,
yeah.
So there was fighters, you know, there was a lot of fighters he could have fought, and he didn't do it. So, but the problem with talking about this right now is that people are set. That Mayweather did everything right and fought all the best guys. They're set in their head with that, you know, and that's mostly
right.
So there's nothing you could say. So right now the fact that we're even talking, all it's going to say is people going to go, oh, what a bunch of haters. They just don't like him. Like, what is it to me? Why would I not like the man to, like, discredit his accomplishments? What does that get me? You know what I mean? So I'm a realist in my mind, you know, like I say what I believe, and there's no bias like where I go, oh, I have to, you know, down somebody's career. I think Floyd is an unbelievable talent. I always did. But I just wish he went against the grain and took
right.
some bigger risks a few times in his career to certify that greatness, because I always thought he had the talent to be like, wow, this is the man. But I just think that he knew what he was doing. He knew having that undefeated record to the masses is more important than going and daring to be great like a Hopkins would do, you know?
Exactly. Well, here we go. We got R.A. Rugged Man here with us. R.A., tell us really quick where listeners can go and find your music, man, so they can purchase it. And if they haven't heard you, where they can find you.
Oh, just, you know, you go to YouTube, go to Google, go to anywhere. R.A. the Rugged Man. I've been around for a million years, and got a lot of classic hip hop records out there with a lot of classic artists. Yeah, that's what some people say. I appreciate that, man. R.A. the Rugged Man. I'm you know, you can buy the CDs. Legends Never Die is in stores. That's the latest one, and you know, a lot of all over the world, they're saying it's a, you know, certified classic. So I'm happy with the crowd reaction to that one. But working on the next one right now. That's not going to be out for a while. And I'm dropping a video next week for a song called Media Midgets. That's going to be one of my the video is it's very different. The director really had his mind twisted when we did this one, but it's probably one of my most higher budget looking videos. It looks like it cost $100,000, even though it didn't. It just looks so big and expensive, you know. So.
Bro, I got to tell you, that one video that you did that took it old school. You took it back. That was a great song and a great video. I loved it, man.
Oh,
you know.
Oh, when I was doing all the 80s references and stuff.
Yeah.
That's called Jesus Christ. See, I couldn't remember the names of the fighters. I couldn't even remember the name of my own song. So, definition of a rap flow. Yeah, yeah. So, but I also have a video off the last album called "Still Get Through the Day." That's my favorite video so far. It's called "Still Get Through the Day," and it's based on my real life, and I had characters playing my handicapped brothers and sisters, and had characters playing, you know, my father, like the real actors. And it's just really touching. The director did a great, great job. His name's Douglas Quill, and he's the same director of Media Midgets. So that's coming out this week. Yeah.
There you go. R.A. Rugged Man here on Leaving the Ring. Hey, brother, you got to come back and visit us a lot sooner, man. It's been too long since you've been on here on the show with us.
Yeah, well, I'm in town for the whole month, so I'm going to catch up on the fights that I missed when I was overseas anyway, you know? So.
Right. All right, brother. Well, you take care, man. It was good talking to you.
Thanks. All right.
R.A. Rugged Man here on Leaving the Ring. I believe I lost my co-host. If you missed the interview, it was just basically, you know, it wasn't really an interview. It was really just three guys chopping it up, talking boxing here on the show. I don't know what happened, Gabe, but he got dropped off. You know, Gabe doesn't listen to hip hop, so I think he just said, I can't wear. I'm gonna get off. But anyways, hey, listen, going back with Dante Wilder and Stubborn, I believe I got my co-host back with me. Gabe, are you there?
That was weird. Yeah, some bizarre surge kicked me off.
That's weird.
Did we lose
okay,
all
so,
day, or did we say?
No, he already said goodbye and everything. You know, okay, really quick, man. Let's give up our breakdown of Stubborn and Wilder. I think your pick is going to be Stubborn. I think my pick is going to be Stubborn. I just find like I said, there's a lot of interesting things about that fight, and I think that if Stubborn tries to maybe go a much more active than we've seen him do against Oriola, I think he'd get him out of there. I think it's really up to Stubborn and how long and how many rounds he allows Wilder. That's if Wilder doesn't smarten up and try to use some ring generalship, man, because that's something that, like you mentioned, his height and his reach, he really has never really posed that on anybody. You know, he's kind of gotten away with it because of his punch, that power punch, that right hand that lands. But there's just no way he's going to be able to do that. I just don't see it. I mean, obviously you can't say no way, but I don't see that happening at all, landing a big shot on him.
I think what you're talking, you know, what you mentioned earlier is really on point, though, about Stubborn, that he will shell up and wait on the outside. And if he allows that to happen, if he does that early and lets Wilder get comfortable, get into a rhythm where he's just, you know, picking him apart with the jab, and if Wilder's able to kind of keep him at bay like that, you know, by round two or three, if he lets that kind of rhythm set in, you know, it could start getting late in the fight and start to get the middle of the fight and he's going to have to start making, you know, taking risks that he doesn't want to. So I think it is incumbent on Stubborn to get in close, get to that body, dig into him, and make sure that Wilder understands what he's dealing with, you know, right off the bat, that he's dealing with a dangerous person. If he doesn't establish himself early and just kind of fights like, I've got the belt and you have to take it from me, Severn's going to be in a lot of trouble.
You know,
I don't see that happening.
Here's the thing, too, is that Oriella had success when throwing a large amount of punches, but that's what really got him into the danger zone, that red zone with Stubbern's, because Stubbern was able to counter him and throw some punches in between the shots of Chris. Dante Wilder might have to be a bit reserved, might have to be very disciplined to stay on the outside, but my problem is if he does fight a perfect fight in terms of using that height and that reach, Gabriel, that there's got to be some point where he's going to go, I'm doing such a great job, let me try to get him out of there and be in that pocket a bit too long where he can get caught, clipped, dropped, and stopped.
Yeah, I haven't really made an actual pick, you know. I mean, I'm going with Stubbern. I think his way to win is by knockout. But he's gonna have to earn it. He's gonna have to go in, get past that right and that long jab, and get to the body, and dig in and kind of manhandle him, back up Stubbern or back up Wilder a bit. I mean, you know, Wilder tweeted a picture today of him in the gym and saying, you know, he's not gonna get past. He's not gonna be able to get close enough to land a punch. But in the photo, maybe it's a weird angle, but I mean, we've seen his fights. His legs are so ridiculously skinny, dude. I just don't see.
Yeah.
Him being, I think I picture Severn knocking him off the block. You know what I mean? When they come in on a clinch, I think he's going to be the one that gets backed up. And I think when they get, you know, inside, Severn is going to be, just because he's a little bit shorter and thicker, he's going to be the tougher guy to deal with. I also just look at this as like I, you know, we said with RA, you know, that here's a guy that hasn't really been challenged yet. I mean, I think it'd be a pretty incredible story if Wilder shows us his depth, shows us his class in his first big step-up fight. I mean, you know, in terms of matchups, I guess Stubbern is more the puncher. Wilder is kind of a boxer puncher. So it kind of favors him a little bit just because of his height and everything. But I don't know. I think history's kind of moving back towards the traditional sized heavyweight. And added to which, name me an Al Haymon fighter, which Wilder is, that's been developed the way he's been, and when he's met with a challenge, he's been successful. I don't think I can name one.
I'm flipping through I'm flipping it through my head here, and no, I can't. I can't find one. I mean, you know,
so
here,
just based on that, I think he's got a problem.
Yeah, he's got a real big problem. I mean, the thing is that this is what I like about Stubbern. If you look at his body, there's a lot of girth there. He's got a thick neck, big shoulders, big arms, big legs. He's got weight that, to my opinion, even if he is the shell up, that he could walk down Wilder. There's a lot there that could tell me he could, you know, take some shots to the glove and walk him and then catch him with a counter shot. But then, too, sitting on those ropes, tell me if I'm wrong here, but the experience level hasn't even been seen to even really tell me, could Dante Wilder be disciplined enough not to be sucked in into trying to land more than two or three punches when Stubbern is on those ropes? Nothing there tells me he's going to do that. What we've seen from Dante is try to land the big right hand, and then try to land a couple other shots and stay right there in that center where he's hittable at. And that's why I'm leaning with Stubbern by TKO. I think he drops him in the mid-rounds. I think the reason why he goes mid-rounds, because of what Stubbern's style and his temperament, it's going to bring him into those mid-rounds. And I think that a lot of it, too, is Wilder's inexperience and a bit of a immaturity that he has in the ring. It's going to cost him against a more seasoned, more patient, and a really hard-hitting heavyweight.
Yeah, I think that's a solid pick. I'm going to agree with you, Dave. I know that's not exciting, but, you know, Stubbern, I'm going to go Stubbern TKO, but you know, I haven't picked a round yet. You know, I just think it. I just think that's his way to win, because on the flip side of it, if we're looking at the politics of it, you know, Al Haymon is Wilder's guy. I tend to think that he's more powerful in this situation than Don King. You know, the kingdom has fallen. So I think, you know, I think it's incumbent on him to get those knockdowns, get Dude out of there. And, you know, Harold Scogniers, always remember it. I watched Wilder get dropped by a journeyman from an uppercut. And, you know, and the guy had some heights to him.
Right.
I remember Scogniers did. So I just can't ever get that out of my head. And like I said, he did get hurt by a jab recently, like one of his most recent fights. It's like, wait a minute, he's stumbling off a jab? He ended up not going to do that, but still. So there's just more to bet on with Stavern. He's a more known commodity than Wilder, which is just, he's a wild card at this point.
Yeah.
If he knocks Dude out and he does it in an impressive fashion, great for boxing. We've got an American heavyweight champion.
Absolutely.
At least the title holder. But I just can't get Michael Grant out of my head.
Well, here's
let
me tell you this. Here's the crazy part is Michael Grant had a much better resume than Wilder.
Yes.
Getting the shot with his title. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing here. You know, here's the thing. This is what tells when I talk to certain people and they'll go like, well, we saw you guys' article about Espinoza and you guys say he's the anti-Haymon. They're the anti-Haymon. How so? Well, look at the track record. Do you really think the Espinozas would have thrown Deontay Wilder immediately for a title? Or would they have built them up with six fights the way they're doing with Oscar Valdez? That kid fought six fights last year. He's going to be fighting again another six, possibly at the tail end of that six, he'll get a title shot, a French title shot. We don't know, but there's got to be a certain development. Yeah, 32 wins, 32 knockouts, but 32 wins against who? That's the telling part of where and so forth. Well, you know, Al Haymon's a promoter, but if you talk to certain people in the business, you can't match make any of his fighters until it goes through him first.
Right.
He's the man in all the chairs in the business, you know. He's the matchmaker, the promoter, and the manager. He delegates his own company off his mom's couch, and he's the guy you have to go through. You talk to a manager that has a fighter that's under the advisement of Al Haymon, what did they say? Gabriel, a manager always says, you know, well, Irma's manager, but at the same time, he's got the last word. So that tells you everything right there.
Yeah.
Egotistically, you can't get nothing past this guy. So it just tells you also, in my opinion, it also tells you how desperate he wants that heavyweight title, how desperate he wants it. And he's really putting in I give it to him. He's gambling a lot because there is my honest belief, if Dante gets knocked out, Gabriel, that could have been avoided if you would have allowed him to build on it, because he does show some promise, not a lot yet, but some promise that he could be a force really to be reckoned with 4 to 5 years from right now. And I know because of the age limit, I know that, you know, he started off late. They have to try to get as much as they can for the kid. But sometimes it's better to wait to get more than in rush and then lose lots. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, there's – there are certain things that are just truths, you know, and the way you develop a guy is one of them. You have to take your time. You have to give him the right fights. And granted, I'm sure they were getting him fights hoping that guys would go the distance with him, and they didn't. You know, I think Malik Scott was a perfect example of that, that he was supposed to. And a lot of people will point at that. You could point at that fight as kind of the joker in the deck. How good is that win?
Right.
You know, Wilder or, you know, Malik Scott was this guy that was kind of like a legend among the gyms when I was being down there. And when Malik Scott gets healthy, or when his hand's better, or when his managerial problems are settled, this dude is the best American heavyweight prospect. He can box like a dream, and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. He's got size. And Wilder did go through him. You know, they did have sparring sessions, and Wilder now has gone through him as a pro, you know, in an actual fight. So, you know, if there's one fight I would point out to that gives me pause in my pick, it would probably be that fight. You know, but you never know. And, you know, Malik could have just got caught. Who knows? A lot of people say they didn't want it because they're buddies. I'm not sure how much I believe that. But But regardless, I think that is an interesting fight to kind of break down and go, you know, maybe Wilder is much better than we realize. And it's just he's blowing guys out so fast, we don't get a chance to see everything he's got. Man, I can't wait for this fight. But
I can't wait either. You know, the sad part about it is that we all want and we wish, not all, but we, you know, the wish list is on the American fans is finding an American heavyweight. But there's a missing ingredient there, too, in the finding that American heavyweight, and that's finding the right coach. We don't have Emmanuel Stewards around anymore, you know, and those guys, like Emmanuel Stewards, one of the guys, the key guys, that could really develop a big size man in Dante Wilder that also could also help in terms of guiding him in the right direction of how to build his confidence and how to hone those skills in that ring. There are none of those type of trainers right now that have come back from that old cloth, that old school cloth of how to build and mold a heavyweight. That's something also that's missing in American boxing community in for heavyweight fighters out there. Anyways, folks, thanks for tuning in. Catch us next week. Don't forget, Monday is the next round. Tuesday is Tijuana Box, Boxeo Tijuana Radio. And, hey, you guys be safe. Take care. Talk to you guys soon.
As always, fun show. And hell of a guest. I didn't think we would do an hour, but, wow, we did. I'll see you next week. Peace.
All right.